This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.
You're listening to Radio Hawke's Bay, your community access radio station, and I'm Lynn Trafford presenting Rotary Wheels on behalf of the Rotary Club of Ahuriri Sunrise in Napier. This program is kindly sponsored by Dobson's Photo and Camera in Havelock North opposite the library and in Lower Emerson Street, Napier. If you are considering the purchase of a new camera, binocular or telescope, how about a chat to the staff at Dobson's to hear their professional recommendations? Dobson's Photo and Camera, Havelock North and Napier. With me in the studio today is fellow Rotarian Lou Willoughby from my club, Ahuriri Sunrise in Napier. Lou recently addressed the club about his membership of U3A in Hawke's Bay and an address he had delivered to them on climate change. He presented the same talk to Ahuriri Sunrise, and when I asked him to come and chat about it on Rotary Wheels, he agreed with the proviso that he is not an expert in this field, just incredibly interested in what is happening all around us. I am delighted to introduce my fellow Rotarian and club member, Lou Willoughby. Hello, Lou.
Good morning.
It's lovely to have you with us in the studio today. Now, you are a relatively new member of Ahuriri Sunrise, so I want to take you back a few years here, Lou. Why join Rotary when you had a choice of service clubs and a choice of Rotary clubs in the Bay? Why Rotary? Why Ahuriri Sunrise?
Well, the reason that I joined the Ahuriri Sunrise group was the time of the meeting was actually incredibly important to me. I'm a bit of a morning person, Lynn, and going to a meeting at 7 o'clock in the morning and having it over and done with by 8 o'clock was really attractive to me. Because
that,
I know
that's
that
where we belong, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a really useful time of the day to have a meeting from my perspective. I mean, I spent my life in the shearing industry, which meant that I was well used to getting up early, and old habits die hard.
Yeah, they do, don't they? And I know, sort of thinking about that on another level as well, Lou, that when I was working over here in Hastings, I could do Rotary in Napier and still be at my desk at 8:30 in the morning in Hastings. Not bad, huh?
No, that's pretty good.
It's pretty good, isn't it? Who asked you to join?
Well, I was actually asked to join by Adrian, who's currently our president.
She is. Adrian Williams, we're talking about, yeah.
And I'd known Adrian for many years because of my work in the wool industry, and she had come from a farming background.
She did.
Yes. Mm. So Adrian, who only lives very close to me, said to me, "Come on, Lou, I think the Rotary Club would be ideal for you." I don't know whether she saw me moping around the streets with nothing to do, but she certainly thought put a pressure of the idea in my mind, so I came along.
Do you remember when that was?
I'm pretty sure it was around February or March 2021, I think.
2021.
Yeah, so it's only a couple of years ago, but it's been a very,
well,
very...
Well, 3 years, Lou, 3 years. It goes pretty quickly, doesn't it, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember coming for the first time and meeting us all?
Yeah, pretty much. I do remember that first meeting. Well, in particular, the fact that I actually did already know a few Rotarians that were there. So that was
a help that
I didn't come in cold. So I actually had a couple of neighbours and other friends there. So it was really good in that respect.
Did it take long to settle in? I mean, when you're new, you knew a wee few people, so that helps. Mm. But did it take long for you to think, actually, I feel very much at home here?
Well, actually, it happened fairly quickly
for me. Good.
Yes, it wasn't too bad. I got involved in a couple of early projects, and that sort of helped a bit as well. So you actually met people who I didn't know and worked with them on a project. So that
what kinds of things did they involve you in, Lou?
Well, for a start, I got involved really in projects that you might call environmental sort of projects
okay.
that
Doing
we have,
what?
Like beach cleanups
mm, yeah,
and
beach cleanup, yeah.
those sorts of things, which are pretty basic sort of activity.
But they're good fellowship, aren't they?
They're excellent to get together with yeah. half a dozen people, and they don't actually take a long time out of your day. So as long as you know the day's coming up, you can allocate yourself, say, a couple of hours to go down to, well, in this case, I think we went down to Marine Parade and picked up a lot of plastic yeah. and rubbish.
Oh, I know. It's awful, isn't it?
Well, it's quite astounding to me, really, that I was able to pick up about, in the space of an hour, four large bags of just debris.
Yeah.
It's quite,
it's sad,
quite surprising.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
it's sad.
Yeah.
We like to think of our beach as well at the moment. Of course, yeah. they're covered in wood still. Yeah. But if the wood were not there, we like to think of our beach as being relatively clean. But when you go along with the big black plastic rubbish bags, oh boy.
Yeah.
They're not, are they?
It's quite a shock to you, really.
And, it is.
And even though it was, I must say, a little disappointing in that I think only about 2 weeks later we had a bit of a massive high tide. And
it all came again.
But let's face it, you do have a feeling of achieving something
yeah.
by actually going out and picking up the stuff.
And when you're doing that, you're meeting your fellow Rotarians on quite a different basis, aren't
exactly.
they, really?
Yeah.
They've got shorts and a T-shirt on and they look a bit different, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you find out a little bit more about them and what they did in their, perhaps in a previous life, or for some of them, of course, they're still working.
Yes,
and have made time to come along, which I think is pretty astounding for people who can make time out of a working day to come and help.
Well, we pick and choose what we get involved in, don't we? There's always a lot of choice out there with Rotary projects, whether they be at our club or with another club, and we're just invited to pop along. There's a lot of choice as to what we can do in our community. Other than the beach cleanup, what other things might you have done?
Well, one that I really enjoyed being involved with was actually after Cyclone Gabriel.
Oh, yes.
With a few other Rotarians, we just had quite an impromptu group, went down to McLean Park, and we worked together down there just doing simple stuff like unloading material off a truck or stacking and sorting the food that had been donated, in particular from supermarkets and places like that. It had to be sorted up properly so it could be utilised. So while you've got a chef or a person in charge of what's going to be cooked, you also need to have a few servants behind the scene doing the sorting up and the packaging, and so that the food didn't go to waste and it could be utilised properly. So that was really quite enjoyable. And another one that we did, just a half a dozen of us just said, what can we do? Probably about 5-7 days after Gabriel had come through, we decided to start down by the fire station in Napier on Terradale Road, and we decided that we would clean up the green area, the green strip, right the way along and go along as far as we can, because there was an absolute mess of debris laying on the lawns. And our attitude really was to get that stuff into manageable heaps, so that at least the lawn mowing contractors could come along and get on top of that, because we felt if that wasn't done, we could end up with like hay paddocks along there and a very untidy looking view. And it was important for people to sort of get back to a feeling that things were getting a little bit back to normal again.
And also at that time, I remember that because I went along and took the photos for our newsletter of what you were achieving down there. There were considerable piles of stuff, really. And that was just a tiny weeny bit you were doing, really, round about the fire station.
Yeah.
Not that much
land concern,
but a hell of a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and it really made you realise that actually, that if this much stuff was in a public area, all those homes
are
surrounding it,
with their
trees and shrubs, would also have undergone quite a lot of damage. I know we all know that our own gardens were slashed and beaten up by that particular cyclone.
It was just ongoing, wasn't it? Did you go to any of the work that our Rotary Club did out in Esk Valley? Did you go to any of that?
I only went out once. I was able to go.
What did you find when you went out?
Well, of course, the size of the devastation was really shocking. And no matter how much you saw on television, you could not get a real impression until you actually went and saw it yourself. And, of course, for a lot of us in Napier, without power, we didn't actually have television. So all our friends around New Zealand actually had a far better view of the devastation than we did.
And wasn't
we
were that only, funny? That was funny, wasn't
yes,
it?
We were only 5 or 10 kilometres away, and we had no real idea of the size of the floods.
No.
Or the amount of damage that had been done. And then it's a funny thing, isn't it? You get a survivor guilt complex. You don't wish to go out and look and see what other people are going through.
I know.
It makes you feel
unless you can help somehow.
Unless you can do something.
You stay
home.
Away.
You don't go out and do stuff like that.
No, that's great.
And look, sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
It was quite shocking.
So we've got a busy time coming up at Rotary as we approach Christmas.
Yeah.
As at the time of recording this interview, we were approaching Christmas. Did you sell Christmas puddings?
The Christmas puddings. Well, I did sell them last year.
Yes.
And that was the project I was involved with last year, selling Christmas puddings. However, let's face it, Lynn, you and I both know that the Christmas puddings this year are in the hands of a salesman.
That's right, super salesman Andy.
Andy Meyer, our super salesman, is breaking all records with his in-your-face sales technique.
That's it's compulsory to purchase Christmas puddings.
Exactly.
If you see Andy coming, you cross the road and hide behind the nearest car.
Exactly, yeah. Unless you've already bought a significant number of Christmas puddings.
You're going to get sucked in, aren't you?
Exactly, yeah.
Lou, how about you do a promo for our club? Where do we meet and when, please?
Well, we meet at 7 a.m. Wednesday mornings at East Pier at Ahuriri. And it's a great meeting. We do it from 7 till 8. There's a minimal of protocol at the meetings.
Very informal.
Yes. And what I really, really enjoy about going to the meetings is the guest speakers, because the guest speakers really bring in another aspect of life around Hawke's Bay or nationally. You meet these extremely talented, often young people who come along. Perhaps they're looking for a little bit of funding, but nevertheless, they're youngsters who are sports people or on cultural musicians, telling the story of how they, of their own ambitions, where they want to go, what they've achieved so far. You have people from perhaps who are fundraisers for various societies who need money to make those societies work. So the guest speakers to me are really great. And then we often have an interesting, as you know, the fine session where people are either tested for their knowledge or penalised for their lack of it, or else having to pay a small fine for a misdemeanor during the week that somebody spotted them.
As they should.
That's quite good. Yes. Quite good for the sense of belonging to a club.
That's right.
I really enjoy it.
And we use those monies that we raise, which isn't an awful lot, but we use those to give away to charity. Yeah. Or if we've got a guest speaker that we want to buy breakfast for or something like that. So it doesn't cost the club any money. Yeah. You were recently one of our guest speakers, as I said. You came to talk about U3A. What is U3A?
Well, U3A, University of the Third Age, it sounds vaguely hippie-ish, but can I tell you, Lynn?
Vaguely hippie-ish. Oh, no.
It's not a bunch of elderly hippies lurking around smoking special cigarettes.
Is
the University of the Third Age is actually stands for an opportunity to advance your knowledge in the Third Age, which I presume occurs once you reach the age of about 60. So you've got a couple of
periods. Your retirement.
Well, yeah, you've already been through the university of adversity because you've managed to live that long, and now you've got time to perhaps learn a little. And people have different interests.
That's so right. What arts. Sorts of things do you talk about then at those meetings?
I'm part of the geography group.
Geography, okay. Yeah.
And the geography group meet, and initially, of course, it would be they would take a topic and they would talk about a country, for instance, Albania, yes, or usually somewhere that was slightly different, somewhere that you didn't, nobody sort of knew too much about.
Good idea.
And one person in the group of about 15 in the geography group would get the topic allocated to them. You, at the start of the year, you have a meeting and you all decide which topics you're going to talk about. And you get allocated the topic. As we've gone through the wearing out the countries, we've ended up talking about different people. So we've ended up talking about the Laplanders or the people out of the bush, people in southern Africa or that sort of thing. I did a talk once on the Kurdish people. So it's extremely interesting. I find it a great place to go.
Another good way to meet people.
Yeah, and interesting folk, and you get a little bit of education, perhaps.
Of course, and we have some of our Rotary members that go to these things as well. You're not just the only one that goes to those meetings. So another good way to get to know other folk from Hawke's Bay. Your talk to us the other day was under the heading, I suppose, of a global warming. You divided this into several little sections here. Climate change, temperature, sea level rise, ecosystems, and increase extreme weather events. What I liked, when you told us about this, you talked about the research that you did for this talk and how it took you hours and hours and hours to put it all together. Then you talked about AI. Explain.
Well, I had given myself the topic, as you say, to find out about the impact, actually, of global warming on El Nino and La Nina. And I did spend a lot of time researching it, going to the various websites in the United States and New Zealand to find out about it. I cut and pasted it, and great talk, I thought to myself, at the end of the day, had a huge amount of information.
And it took hours
probably took me about 10 or 12 hours of, of overall research.
Yeah, to come up with it all.
Yeah, and then at this time I heard something on the radio about artificial intelligence. So I thought, I wonder what they came up to say with. So I joined up. In those days, it was free, actually. I think you have to pay now.
Yep.
But I signed on, and I said, what is the impact of global warming on La Nina and El Nino? And it hesitated for about 3 seconds and spat out 1,500 words virtually.
Without thinking.
Without thinking. And a complete summary virtually of all the stuff that I'd put together. And I thought, There we go.
But I think it's quite funny. It does not mean, I mean, we don't want to get into a talk about AI because we're supposed to be talking about climate change, but you would be a much better informed person for having done the proper research rather than just read what is put in front of you by AI. Let's talk about some of it. Climate change and the effects of the increase of temperature change.
Yes.
Where are we heading and where have we come from?
Well, we've come from a pretty low base. It's
we have, yes.
And it's generally measured from the 1880s when the Industrial Revolution was starting to make some sort of impact. And human, in scientific terms, I think that would be about the time when we, for a start, we were able to actually measure more accurately global temperatures. And also that was the start of the impact of human activities on the global scheme, the production of gases, et cetera, from the massive burning of coal, I guess, that occurred during the Industrial Revolution and right through to modern times, of course. So the increase in temperature is looking to be predicted in another 20 to 30 years to have been 3.5 degrees. Well, we see what's happening now
Yes.
It's inevitable. It's going to be very difficult to turn that back. And the impact that global warming has on the other factors. The other things are merely symptoms of global warming. Sea level rise is a symptom of global warming because the global warming lifts the ice shelf.
However, we do read a lot about what might happen with melting. We're getting melting now, aren't we? And we have effects, and we keep being warned about the fact that our sea might raise 1 meter.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of a scary thought.
Yeah, it's definitely a risk. And those, you know, scientists will say that in fact it's virtually impossible now to turn that back.
Yeah. We better talk about El Nino and La Nina. What's the difference between the two of these things? We bandy these terms around all the time. Mm. What do they actually mean, Lou?
Right. El Nino, I always think, is the one that brings us the dry conditions. El Nino, ending in N-O, no rain.
No rain.
El Nino, no rain. That's how I remember. And La Nina, which generally brings us easterly winds here in the Hawke's Bay, and brings us the rain. We only have to think about what we've experienced the last 2 years to know that we're all missing that lovely Hawke's Bay sun. And we've had those easterly conditions. That's La Nina. And the cause of them is a difference in surface air pressure between, or the way it's measured, is the surface air measure between Darwin and Tahiti. And as that surface air pressure changes, that, of course, means that there's a movement of the air mass from one part of the Pacific to another. And that is the most significant driver that's occurring within this El Nino and La Nina event.
So El Nino, what do we expect in Hawke's Bay in an El Nino period?
In an El Nino year, we will get a marked increase in westerly winds and northerly winds, so which, of course, gives us much drier weather.
Hot and dry.
Exactly. Yeah, usually warmer. Although, apparently, it's not the rise in temperature is not always can be guaranteed. And the time of the year it occurs is also can be quite, have a big impact on us. Whether it actually comes later, it's quite significant, because if it comes later, if we get dry right through till May, our ability for farmers to grow grass, which they can save for winter feed, becomes much reduced.
It does. And that's when we get into trouble, isn't it? We have not got those autumnal rains that we rely on for feeding the ground.
Yep.
La Nina, what happens to us in Hawke's Bay when we get that period?
Well, the increase in easterlies. And with the easterly, we get the moisture. And that, for many people, of course, farmers may not mind an easterly, but of course with those easterlies we also get an increase in the likelihood that we will get cyclones coming down from the Pacific as well in those circumstances.
Of course, when we change from one of these periods to another, it doesn't just happen overnight, does it? It doesn't like we're end of February, we're out of one, and the 1st of March, we're into another. It doesn't happen like that.
No. There is a period of maybe a year even of a neutral phase when the weather is pretty much neither one thing nor the other. But the indications this year around, apparently, and I checked them the other day, are still very much that El Nino is on its way for sure.
Yeah,
despite we're
be
the
hit.
Fact we had the other day, we had another bit of rain, and we're thinking, and quite cold, El Nino will be on its way. for sure.
You're quite right. And everyone's talking about the fact that we're going to enter that stage, aren't we? But we'll take that little swing period of time to swap from one to the other. Thank you, Lou Willoughby, fellow Rotarian and member of my club, Ahuriri Sunrise in Napier. Thank you for being my guest on Rotary Wheels. Should our chat today spark an interest in U3A for you, there is much to be found online about the meetings here in the Bay. Similarly, should you be considering contributing to your local community, how about doing so via Rotary? We have 11 clubs in the Greater Hawke's Bay region, one in Wairoa, five in Napier, four in Hastings and one in Waipukarau. There is bound to be one close by to you. In the first instance, hit Google, and should you need to chat, phone Radio Hawke's Bay and ask for me. Please join me every Monday morning just after the 10 o'clock news to meet another Rotarian from around the Bay. I'm Lynn Trafford.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.